I love food chain. This is Sharon Chisholm, and I'm a food tech junkie and innovation nerd who loves a good story. This podcast combines all of my favorite vices into a deep dive about the problems our food system faces and the visionary people working on solutions. In today's episode, we have the privilege of speaking with an exceptional entrepreneur. Laura Katz is the brilliant mind behind Helenia, an innovative ingredient platform that aims to revolutionize the very core of the food industry, starting with an unexpected yet crucial focus, breast milk. Are you ready? Here we go.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Good, Sharon. Thanks so much for having me today.
It's a pleasure. I'm very curious about your groundbreaking work. Can you tell us a little bit how you got started and what led you to do what you're doing today?
Absolutely. So I am a food scientist by training. So I started my career developing food products, working in product development, and taking things from idea to shelf. So doing all of the fun technical bits that go into making a food product, formulating, nutrition work, regulatory work, scaling, manufacturing, all the good stuff, and had a lot of fun doing that, but saw a lot of innovation going into alternative dairy and alternative meat. And I thought, well, this is great technology, seeing the things come out 6-7+ years ago to bring better options to consumers. And I thought, well, if we could channel this technology into nutrition and making not just our foods taste better, but actually make them healthier, then we can be using this science in such an innovative way. And at the same time, I was listening to a podcast on the black market for breast milk and how parents in the US, and not just in the US, go onto the internet to buy breast milk from strangers. Mm-hmm. And the reason they do this is to seek out and to provide the immunity benefits of breast milk to their children, whether they can't breastfeed or choose not to breastfeed. That's an option that some parents are looking for, and they don't quite find that in conventional infant formula. And I thought, well, okay, we have all of this technology. Can we recreate the components of human milk that help to provide those immunity properties? And if we can do that, and we have the science to do this for kind of other applications, could we be creating a world in which we are bridging the gap between breast milk and infant formula and providing something for the parents who are, you know, desperately seeking breast milk on the internet, and also to hopefully see better health outcomes in formula-fed babies? So all of this kind of came together, and, you know, I was already working in food, and it was really a clear, I have to be doing this. And it took me several years to actually get started with Helena, you know, save money. I had to be able to quit my day job, which takes living in New York City many years of saving money, to figure out how you do that, and got started with that mission in mid-2019.
Well, congrats. Super young company and very interesting story. But can I just say, I find it alarming that people would buy breast milk on the internet with all sorts of diseases or drug usage you can screen for. Can you give me a little bit more details on this?
I mean, this was the podcast I had listened to at that time. I think it was in 2015. Mm-hmm. But there's a really long history of people sharing breast milk. I mean, wet nurses existed. I mean, up until really HIV and AIDS, when that became rampant in the 80s, that was really the moment where the sharing of breast milk became much less popular because of concern of disease and infection. But it's been a practice that people have been doing for a long time. And it's really, of course, tough to regulate. And there's a lot of safety concerns. And one of the reasons why infant formula is so important and so many babies eat it and grow on it successfully. And so there has to be a way to channel innovation to this product that, you know, grows most babies in this country in a way that we can be bringing and targeting specific properties of breast milk and using what we use, synthetic biology, to make that happen because breast milk is such an amazing, you know, the gold standard, we call it. It's an amazing liquid, dynamic liquid, and there's so much we can learn from it to bring to babies. So we hopefully can see less of this online internet sharing because it's, you know, not always the safest practice to do that. But some parents still choose to.
That's awesome, especially in light of what you just described. So how does it work? Can you tell us a little bit about the tech or synthetic biology behind Helena?
Absolutely. So at Helena, the kind of the core of what we have built is a platform that allows us to biomanufacture components of breast milk, specifically proteins. So when we started the company, we looked at breast milk and we said, what in here is helping to drive immune development in infants? And there's a lot of living parts. Breast milk has a lot of stuff in it that is very important, but we really narrowed in on proteins. And proteins have a potency from an immune perspective that is quite unique in breast milk. So we looked at all of these different ways that we could recreate these proteins. And the technology that we've built actually starts with yeast. So really at the core of the world of synthetic biology are these little bugs or different types of organisms. You can use yeast or bacteria or algae, and you can train them to become kind of tiny manufacturing hubs and train these little organisms to produce the component or molecule of interest. So we have trained yeast and engineered our yeast to become experts at creating the proteins found in breast milk. And we're making proteins in breast milk, but they're humanized proteins that are actually found throughout the human body. So breast milk is a secretion, like our tears and sweat. And there's actually some commonality between those things. So what we're making is actually found and made throughout the human body. And it has really important function for our overall health, whether that's for babies or kind of throughout the life cycle. So our organism, which we work with a very proprietary design yeast system, when we throw that yeast into really large tanks, fermentation tanks, our yeast gets fermented. And then during that process, it starts to spit out proteins that are identical to the ones in our body. And then from there, we purify these proteins to be, you know, very, very pure ingredients that we can add to all kinds of foods. One is infant formula, but we're looking to put this into all kinds of products where we could be making a positive impact on people's health. And I would like to compare it to the production of something like insulin. Insulin is made actually through a fermentation process of bacteria, but human insulin is also a protein, and it's used, you know, in the pharmaceutical industry for diabetes treatment, but the process for manufacturing is very comparable to what we do at Helena.
Wow. So are you also able to tell these proteins or enhance them or give them specific properties, I guess. So making them more nutritious, becoming a little bit like functional nutrition. Is that correct?
Yes. So the proteins that we make, the proteins are amino acids, which are the building blocks of proteins. What makes them very functional and what we'll call bioactive, which basically means it impacts our biology. What gives them these special functionalities is partly the structure and then of these amino acids, but also the way sugars get attached on. So the proteins in breast milk are called glycoproteins. Glyco means sugar. And we at Helena, really kind of the special sauce of what we've built is a way to teach yeast not just how to make these amino acid sequences, but also to get the protein and sugar attachments on correctly. And it's the way these sugars get attached that help to provide the functionality. So some of the functions of the proteins that we make are pathogen fighting. So the proteins can help teach our bodies how to fight against pathogens or infections. They can help teach our body how to better absorb certain nutrients. They can help to develop the gut microbiome, and they also aid in cognition. So these are kind of the four general areas of their functionality. And the reason to be at Helena is not just to make proteins, but to make these really functional proteins for their value. And to us, that is the best way that we can move the world of nutrition forward for babies, but for anybody. I mean, we can see this being valuable for sports nutrition, for medical nutrition, for care of the elderly, because these types of benefits are really important for all different age groups.
Got it. And what are glycoproteins?
Glycoproteins are proteins, so amino acids, with very special sugar attachments. So proteins can have all kinds of things that get attached onto them. And the sugar part of the glycoprotein indicates that a sugar gets attached to a protein. So that's what a glycoprotein is. Most proteins in breast milk and in the human body have what we call glycosylation, or the special sugar attachment. And it's a really critical part of the protein's functional properties.
Got it. So basically, you're an ingredient company that is also making food or products. And these products have special properties depending on the targeted population, whether it's the elderly, infants, women, whatever they are, correct?
Yes. And we are bringing the value of breast milk to the consumer for the first time through these proteins. No one else has ever put human proteins into food. And these are proteins that our bodies know how to digest and absorb really well. And we can see the, you know, thousands of years of babies drinking breast milk to understand the properties of these proteins, because these proteins are found in all of mom's breast milks, not just in some, at least the ones that we target. So it's really bringing the value of that to all different types of people.
Wow. And what are some of the misconceptions that you've come across? I mean, there's always been such a debate between breast milk and formula already.
A fed baby is the best baby. And I do think a misconception is, not a misconception, but the pressure that is put onto parents to breastfeed and the kind of rhetoric of breast is best is really challenging, because while we do have data and evidence to show that we have, you know, some health benefits of breast milk that are not found in infant formula today, not everybody can breastfeed. Not everybody wants to breastfeed. And ultimately, it is, you know, the mom's body, and she gets to choose how to use that, and she should. And so we really believe at Helena and myself, that somebody who is currently breastfeeding, that as long as baby is fed, whether that's infant formula or breast milk, that is the best option for them. And infant formula, as it stands today, while, you know, there's been shortages and contamination issues, it is designed to be as nutritious as possible for baby. And we do have pretty thorough regulatory standards in the U.S. So the nutrition profile for infant formula, and all the companies do need to comply with that. So that is a good option for baby, and is something that, if that's what parent decides, then it's great. Breastfeeding is very difficult, and it requires a lot of time. And that's just not something that everybody wants to do.
But it's also something that even if you want to do, sometimes you can't do.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're on medication, whether you don't have any milk. And I think, I mean, as someone that was on the other side, sometimes you're almost put down because you are not breastfeeding. which if you can't, it's not really your fault. I guess then you're giving someone a choice.
Exactly. And it's really to put that type of pressure on a parent, especially when you probably have no sleep, like you're probably exhausted and you're dealing with this baby for the first time. And it's just formula is here for a reason. And the food industry has designed this to support parents. And, you know, what we do at Helena is try to advance that. But the options that are available are perfectly good and acceptable for a baby to eat. And it's really important that I believe, and at Helena, we believe that we're not pressuring parents either way, that it ultimately is their choice and that they're supported in however they choose to feed their child.
I think a lot of it, it's about giving people choices, even with meat or fish. There's plenty of people that maybe they can't, I don't know, be a vegetarian, but they don't like to eat meat because of ethical issues. So if you do it in a lab, you give a person a choice to eat meat in a more sustainable fashion, right? So I think it's a lot of it about choices, and not as much the regulation bit is something that I think it's really lagging behind. What are your thoughts on that?
In the U.S., there are pretty clear standards for infant formula and for all food ingredients in terms of the requirements for safety and nutrition. And I think that the standards that are set by the FDA, they're published in the Code of Federal Regulations, are a really good starting point. I see the opportunity for more what we'll call bioactive ingredients that there are no standards for, and the regulatory hurdles for, you know, things that we make are just much higher. And that's because in the U.S., and I can speak to the U.S. and other jurisdictions are different, the requirement of food is that food provides like calories and nutrition. But anytime there is this kind of other benefit, so any type of efficacy, that's not really seen within the world and the jurisdiction of food. If you look at the drug world and how drugs are evaluated, there is this kind of risk-reward profile that the FDA and regulators are willing to review. And if the risk, you know, if we think about like a vaccine, you'll have, you know, the immunity to whatever it is. And there might be, you know, a couple side effects. Mm-hmm. With food, that is not an option. Only safety is evaluated, no kind of potential efficacy. And there can't be any like downside. And what makes that kind of framework challenging is if you look at breast milk has all of these bioactive components in it. And they're really important for baby's development. And in order to bring those into a consumer product to really try to bridge that gap, there has to be a framework to evaluate these bioactive ingredients and to have this acknowledgement that, yes, those are important for infant formula. And there is no real formal way to do that and no framework. And that's something that we are designing and developing at Helena. But it is definitely a challenge to move these forward. And I do think at this moment, regulators are really starting to become interested in these types of ingredients and their value proposition. But it's very different than, you know, moving a just very kind of completely nutritive ingredient through the regulatory process, like a sugar or a starch, because there's nothing special to how those function. So I think that's to us something that we're hoping as Helena moves through the regulatory process, which we're working on, and other like-minded companies, that we can all kind of band together to create, work with regulators to have a framework to move new ingredients through that have these benefits. Because as of right now, there's just not a real, like a very clearly defined framework for evaluating these things.
So I guess your process is different than precision fermentation company that does salmon. Is that what I'm understanding? Because of the bioactive ingredients?
So our manufacturing process is essentially the same. The outcome of that is different.
Okay.
A lot of precision fermentation companies that are making alternative dairy and alternative meat, their end goal is typically the sensory profile. So their goal is to recreate components of milk or meat using synthetic biology to make, you know, alternative products taste and have the texture more similar to a meat or a milk. Our primary end goal is to recreate these components for recreating the functional value. So we're still using fermentation. This is still precision fermentation. But what we prioritize in the product development process is the functional similarity of what we make to what's found in human milk.
Got it. Because, I mean, there's associations for cultured meat or precision fermentation products like dairy, fish, companies that band together. That's why I was asking if you fit in that category, you're in a different category, you know, because you're making different things.
We are making different things. So Helena is a part of the Precision Fermentation Alliance. It's us and I believe 8 other companies. Everybody has different targets. But what's really wonderful about precision fermentation is in the title, it's precise. So you can say, I want to make X ingredient, this protein, this lipid, this sugar. And you can design and develop a whole process with precision fermentation as the kind of manufacturing, you know,
technology
that you're using. I do have a perspective, and, you know, this is personally, that at the end of the day, the manufacturing process is the manufacturing process. Most companies have their own process for whatever they make, any food ingredient. Everything comes with a manufacturing process. But what's the most important is that the end goal, the end outcome. And for us, that's these bioactive proteins. And for other companies, it might be casein, you know, or whey or egg protein or whatever that might look like. But the unit operation that we use in the manufacturing plant is pretty similar to these other companies.
Got it. And could you partner with, like, say, a company that does alternative dairy to make it functional with your ingredients?
We could, with the platform that we have at Helena, partner with other companies to make proteins of interest that have functional benefits. Absolutely. What we've built is a platform. So what that means is we can kind of plug and play other target proteins or other target ingredients that companies have, that partners might have, to make these functional ingredients. And the key kind of piece here is the glycosylation. So teaching these proteins how to add the sugars correctly onto them so that they can potentially have functional value. That is absolutely something that we can do and something that we are interested in doing. At the end of the day, we want to use science for good. So for us, it's getting this technology as far reaching as possible so that we can be making things that have a health impact on whoever it is that eats the product and get that into as many things as we can, where we're really focused and anchored in nutrition and health.
So, I mean, yeah, that's super interesting because I guess because of your platform, you could work with pretty much anyone. If you could, I don't know, what sort of a dream situation for you? You could, you know, wake up tomorrow morning and say, I'm doing something super cool. What would it be?
A dream situation for me, and this is a long-term goal for Helena, would be to work with the World Food Program. We could have a really important impact in lower income countries and populations where access to nutrition is much more limited than in North America and even in Europe or parts of Europe. And to bring the value of these proteins to communities where immune health is really important, especially in those first 5 years of life. It's, you know, the first 5 years of life and the last kind of 10 years of life that are the places we can have the most impact. And working with the World Food Program to figure out how we can disseminate this technology and these ingredients into those communities, to me, would be like the ultimate dream partnership.
I get that. With all the malnutrition in developing countries, especially in kids, your tech would be pretty revolutionary. Amazing, really.
And for what we make, the dose or the quantity that you need to consume to see any type of immune property, as we see it in breast milk, is not a lot. You don't need to eat a lot of this to have an impact. So we like to compare it to probiotics or prebiotics or even certain vitamins and minerals in terms of the amount that you would need to add to a food product. So what's different here is these are high value, low inclusion ingredients, which is different from a whey protein or a casein that you eat a lot of. That's kind of like the bulk of a product. So to have impact in low income communities where it's not like we need to be making a ton of this stuff to, you know, make up an entire food product, we could be an enhancement or an addition and still have impact. So from a cost structure perspective, in a unit economics perspective, this actually makes a lot of sense because we're not making something that is competing on cost with whey protein from cow's milk. To use the technology of precision fermentation to make higher value ingredients, which can sell for higher price points because you don't need to eat as much of it, to us at Helena makes a lot of sense. And it's one of the kind of strategies that we have to make an impact, is to make things that have a lot of value for our health in small doses, to use fermentation, which is still not the cheapest technology. It allows us to recreate these components to be identical in structure, have the same functional properties, and then ultimately get to a unit economic where we can really provide this to all kinds of populations at a cost that will be accessible to most.
So you're a woman founder. I'm going to change the topic a little bit.
Yep.
You also closed an impressive investment for being, a pretty young company. And this was right before the shortage that happened 2 years ago or 1.5 years ago, November 21. Yep. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey as a woman fundraising and being such a success?
I think with fundraising, the first thing you have to do is prepare as much as possible. What most folks end up doing is you talk to a lot of people, and in that process, you really identify and you can understand who you think you'd work well with. That is how we think about and prioritize fundraising, is we need capital to continue the business and to grow. We have a very clear direction of where we're going. We have innovative technology, we have, you know, intellectual property, we have a really impressive team, we've got all of the pieces to make this an attractive investment, and we are interested in bringing people on board who see the vision and the mission and are the kind of people who, you know, gender aside, whatever it might be aside, they just care about us and what we're doing, and they want to see this move forward. And it's really easy to get caught up in the statistics around female founders in their success with VC funding. I think it's something like 1.9% of venture dollars goes to female founders, which is abysmal. But you really can't think about that during the fundraising process. You have to be really focused on what is the best decision for the business in terms of the type of partners we bring to the table, have the kinds of conversations to allow you to identify who those are, and then really bring them into the journey. And if you can really find that match, you can find funding that works for you. It's certainly not easy. It's a lot of figuring it out along the way, having conversations with different funds, figuring out what their mandates are, understanding if you think that works for you. But ultimately, when you fundraise, you're giving equity away. You're giving a piece of the company away. And you need to have a lot of confidence that that's really valuable. You don't want to just bring anyone in and bring money in because you need funding. You need to bring the right people to the table. So with our Series A fundraise, went through that journey, found some really incredible people who, you know, to this day, and I'm sure, you know, until Helena has an exit, they're going to be people I talk to weekly about all kinds of things. They're team members at the end of the day. They're here with you on the journey. And in the Series A process, it was really fun to figure out who those people were going to be. Our co-lead for the round, Sita is her name, was just an exceptional partner that we brought in. And she, you know, I was texting her earlier this morning. She's always just checking in to see how we're doing and wants to be helpful and supportive. So we've been really lucky in this process and who we've been able to bring to the table. And as we continue to seek investment, because what we're building is capital intensive to create this type of technology, that's the lens that we have is, do I want this person to be, you know, sitting in a meeting with me and the team? Like, what would that be like? Do they have the company's best interests at heart? And are they going to help us build what we believe is going to be really successful and also really impactful for people's health? And, you know, we're always thinking about fundraising. So it's like the top of mind as I really navigate any new conversation with investors.
Well, yeah, it's like a marriage, right? The people you bring aboard, they are there to stay. Oh.
It's a marriage you can't get a divorce from, is exactly what one of my mentors says. So you really, really got to have confidence in this partner just as much as they need to have confidence in you. It's a two-way process. So people talk about the diligence process with investors, but as a founder or whoever you are fundraising, you need to diligence them as well. And we do that with every investor that we bring on. We talk to other portfolio companies that we work with. We really look into them because, you know, it's a two-way relationship. It's not just you taking money from them. You really need to be able to see yourself working with them for a long time.
Yeah, indeed. Do you think that with the issues happening, you guys got sort of a boost? I don't have to phrase this, but whenever you see a problem, then a solution makes more sense to people instead of maybe not understanding right away what that solution is. What's your take on that?
From a fundraising perspective, we have always worked with people. Most of our investors, not all, but most of them have children. And so they have seen and experienced the pain point of infant formula with both the shortages and with COVID and what that has done to the consumer's perspective on what food means to manage their health. I think both of those have really shine a light to investors on the value of what we're doing. But it was always very clear to people why this is important. I think if anything, what the formula shortages might bring is hopefully more, you know, non-VC type funding options. So government grants or partnerships where there could be government involvement in helping to improve the products and the access to infant formula. So that's an area that I get really excited is how we can, you know, also look for non-dilutive capital because that's a great option for businesses, but how we can work with governing bodies, universities, or other like-minded institutions to move these products forward. And certainly within the world of infant formula, I think that's something that we'll start to see in the coming years. Those types of partnerships and even fund, you know, grants and things like that. It takes time to get those prepared on the, you know, on that side of things, on the government side of things. But certainly we expect to see more focus within that area from a financing perspective. And something that we are excited as a business to potentially partner on is looking into grants and other types of structures where we can partner with folks who are looking to advance the field.
You could also do it with larger companies, I guess.
Yep.
So yeah, absolutely. Like sort of strategic investments and partnerships that could enhance theirs or create something completely new.
Absolutely.
And again, you're giving consumers a choice. So why not make all the choices, right?
Yeah. And where values align with larger companies, we are very open-minded to have those conversations. We know, and we're very aware that we're a startup. We're still small. We're not a big corporation with the network and the capital and the infrastructure that large companies have. Not yet. One day we will be. But for now, to get this technology as far reaching as possible, there's a lot of ways that we can slice that. And working with people who have those networks is something that allows so many businesses have done this before to move their products forward in a way that will then, you know, make this accessible to people.
So we talked a little bit about before, obviously it's a cost intensive process. You know, when you were talking about developing countries, you said there's ways because you're just giving a little bit to cut down the cost. I mean, cost is always a key point with any product. Without, not you're just, you know, feeding the 1%, in my opinion, if only a very limited number of people can get what you're selling. What are your steps, I guess, what, not just for Elena, I guess for the whole industry, what should happen to really drive the price down?
It's a tricky question. I think in the next 5 years, it will be very challenging for companies making commodities to compete on commodity pricing. If you purely look at what's involved in precision fermentation, there's feedstock. So there's the stuff that you use to feed the yeast. There's all the energy and the water and all of the just resources that go into that manufacturing process that all cost. And then there's downstream processing. So the way that we purify whatever it is we're making out of the fermentation itself, this can be a 1 to 2 week process. And that is, I mean, purely if you just look at the energy costs, that all adds up to make ingredients that are more expensive than things that are derived from conventional agriculture. We see within the world of fermentation, really the lowest cost, I think, of an ingredient could be maybe $200 a kilogram. If you look at something like whey protein from cow's milk, I don't know, could be maybe $30 to $50 a kilogram. So to move the industry forward, I believe the best thing to do is to focus on ingredients that can be accepted into the market at price points $200 to $300 a kilogram. Things that are currently sold at that price are higher value ingredients like probiotics, for example. So until this industry masters the higher value ingredient, it's going to be really hard to get to kind of anything cheaper just purely from a unit economic perspective. I think we can get there, but it's going to take innovation on the strain engineering side. So how we engineer these organisms to produce these components, as well as innovation on the manufacturing and process side. So it's not easy, but I think it's doable. And I just think it's going to take time. And for this industry to be successful, we have to focus on higher value goods first, just like anything. Most technologies, they start in something more premium. Not to say that this is premium from an access perspective, because probiotics, if you look at them, they're in everything now, right? And you can do the same with fermentation, but it's just very difficult to make something like casein that is cheap. And, you know, cow's milk is not that expensive, but I hope that we can eventually over time get those costs to a place where you can make a casein or a whey protein or an egg protein at cost parity to the conventional. Without that, it's going to be very difficult for these technologies to become mainstream.
You make an interesting point. I am sorry, we are actually out of time, which I apologize. I would have chatted with you for a long time.
I'm very, very interested.
But before I let you go, can you tell us a little bit what's next for you and for Helena? And then just give us a shout out on how people can reach you.
What is next for Helena is getting ready to get our proteins into food products. We're working really hard at the moment on scaling and some of the regulatory activities we need to do. So it's getting through all of these steps so that we can get ready to get our products out into the world, which we're very excited to do. So that is what's next for Helena. Myself, I mean, it's really focusing here and building the company to get to these successful milestones and to have that impact that we're planning to have. You can reach me anywhere, LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm Laura Helena, I believe, on Twitter and on LinkedIn. You can follow me, friend me. Honestly, anyone here can send me an email. I have an open door policy and I really appreciate cold emails. I started the business by cold emailing angel investors to get capital. And that was how Helena got started from a funding perspective. So I will always respond to a cold email. I'm laura@myhelena.com. It's really important to me. So ping me, feel free.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sharon, for having me on the podcast.
Want to dive deep into food innovation? Subscribe to the Food Tech Junkie series. Tune in and listen to the industry's champions whose mission is to reinvent our future by collaborating and disrupting the status quo as a way to rebalance our planet in our daily lives. For more great content, visit our website at www.edibleplanetventures.com and follow us on social media on the Edible Planet Ventures channels.